John Finnemore's Souvenir Programme.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. You sell stamps?
That's right, sir. Yes, collectible stamps.
Excellent. I want to start collecting stamps.
Well, what sort of a collection did you have in mind?
A stamp collection.
Yes, but first day covers, or do you have a theme in mind, or a particular country?
No, a complete collection.
Of what?
Of all the stamps.
All which stamps?
All the stamps.
I don't think you understand, sir. When people say they're collecting stamps, they mean they are building a collection of some stamps.
I understand perfectly, but I am a wealthy man and a man of ambition. I'm going to collect all the stamps.
But you can't. For one thing, they print new stamps every day.
Then we have not a moment to lose.
So what do you want me to do?
Well, firstly, I want you to sell me all your stamps.
All of them?
Naturally. I can't collect all the stamps if you still retain some of the stamps, can I?
Wouldn't it just be easier to buy my shop and cut out the middleman?
I fear you have me confused with a shop collector. I do not want any shops, I only want the stamps to be found therein.
I'm sorry, sir, but I have to tell you, I just don't think it can be done. I don't care how rich you are, I don't think it's possible to buy all the stamps in existence.
Yes, you say that, but when did you last see a butterfly?
What do you mean? No one's seen a butterfly since they all mysteriously disappeared like...
Precisely. And now, if you please, all the stamps.
Certainly, sir. Would you like a bag?
I would imagine so, yes.
For over 30 years, Claude Filbert made a living from his opinions. Whatever the subject, he would have an opinion on it, and editors and producers could rely on two things: that that opinion would be usefully surprising and outrageous, and that he would defend it as if it wasn't.
Telling children you love them is about the most damaging thing a parent can do. And in my opinion, it should be classified as child abuse.
Naturally, this made him a highly sought-after pundit and panellist.
Gandhi was a war criminal. Pure and simple. A cynical tyrant who betrayed his country.
That's a ridiculous thing.
Well, I tell you what, my dear, why don't you go and read a history book and then we can have a grown-up discussion.
But then, live on air, something terrible began to happen to Claude.
But here's someone with a rather different point of view. Claude Filbert, you believe children should be encouraged to take up smoking.
Certainly I do, yes. The sooner we know, of course, that would be ridiculous.
Right. I thought you were going to say smoking is good for kids. That's what you were booked to say.
Yes. I don't know what I... yes, today's children are a lily-livered lot. And I welcome anything that toughens them up a bit. Though obviously not tobacco, because it's addictive and poisonous.
It seemed that the sheer weight of all the reasonable opinions and courteous responses Claude had ruthlessly repressed over his career became too much for him to control. And they began to burst out spontaneously in a condition now known as Filbert syndrome, or niceness Tourette's.
If you'll just let me speak, Mr. Filbert, I'm simply saying we should wait until the report comes out before rushing into judgment.
Young man, I've never heard anything quite so reasonable. I mean, that's exactly the sort of thing that I agree with. Good point. Do go on. God, what's happening to me? I like your shoes.
Unable to continue working because it quickly became clear that apart from his knee-jerk contrarianism, Claude had absolutely nothing of any value to say, Claude retired from public appearances, but the worst was still to come. To his horror, Claude discovered the condition was spreading to his home life.
Celia, for goodness sake, woman, if you must have your inane friends around... Every day I thank God I married you, my darling! What? Oh, God, no!
But, oh, God, yes. And soon it spread.
Dad, they promoted me. I'm overseeing the whole account.
I suppose you think that's something to be proud of, do you? Because I do. Well done, my boy. You're a wonderful son.
Oh, Dad, come here.
Get off me.
Naturally, this apparent change of personality brought Claude closer to his family than ever before in the autumn of his life, which he absolutely hated. In 2005, he died, surrounded by the loving family he despised and by many new friends he had, to his horror, accidentally made. His last words were,
I love love you all. No, I bloody don't. I do with all my heart. I don't, I don't, I don't. God bless you. Don't listen to me. God bless you all. Oh, bugger.
Hello and welcome to the interview sketch. My name's Patsy Straightwoman. For the love of God, give me some jokes or I will kill again. I'm joined this week by Marcel Cuillère, the former accountant, jailed for his part in the RTF scandal. Marcel, let's get that out of the way first of all. You were accused, weren't you, of some pretty, shall we say, creative accounting.
Accused? I do not say accused. I was acclaimed, if you like. I was acclaimed for my creative accounting. But in truth, without creating, there is no accounting. If you are an accountant, but you do not create, then what are you, shall I say, a doer of sums? I have no wish to do sums, to tell you what is 2 + 2. No, I am an accountant creative. I take the numbers, I make them dance. I shape, I mold, and from the dull columns in front of me, I create something vital, something original, and I say, here, look, she speaks.
But this does sound, doesn't it, like criminal activity, like fraud.
How can it be fraud to make art? To fraud, to forge, is to copy the work of another. This is what I would have done if I had taken these figures and slavishly transcribed them into some spreadsheet. That is to forge. How can it be forgery to create, to make, to tell this story that never before has been told?
But your approach must have been hard for your clients to understand sometimes.
Oh, yes, often. Even when I'm famous, I come to some huge bank and they say, ah, yeah, the accountant, let me take you to our books, our ledgers. I say, no. I am an accountant creative. Take me, please, to the highest point of your building. Let me look down with the wind in my hair, the rain on my face. Let me see the people come in and come out. Let me touch your filing cabinets, your fax machines, your receptionist. And then, my friends, I will render my account.
But is it not the case that these accounts you render tended to serve the interests of the company paying for them?
Of course. What would you have me be? I am an artist, first and most and all the time complete, but also I must live.
So I imagine prison must have come as quite a shock to you.
Shock? No. They call it prison. For me, it is the place of the most wonderful freedom. I am fed, I am sheltered, I am free to make the most glorious accounts of my life, entirely from my imagination. Towering, grotesque, beautiful accounts. Accounts that could never be, will never be. Accounts where the debits are 15 stories high and the credits are in Babylonian cuneiform. It is the time of my life.
Marcel Cuillère, thank you very much.
Morning, Geoffrey.
Morning, Godfrey.
Morning, Geoffrey.
Morning,
Daphne, Humphrey, Xanthi.
Morning.
Morning.
Popped up for a bask, have you?
Yes, I thought I'd pop up for a quick bask, yes.
Yeah, super idea, Geoffrey. That's what we're all doing. We've all popped up for a bask.
Super. You can't beat a bask, can you?
You cannot.
No, well, what I always say is, and my wife agrees, what's the point of being a basking shark if you never bask?
Bloody good point.
You know, I mean, we get an awful lot of stick about our basks.
We do, yes. Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
From the dolphins and, you know, the fish.
Bloody fish.
Quite frankly, we've earned a bask. We shark hard. We bask hard.
We do. We absolutely do.
Daphne, it's so refreshing to hear someone come out and say that. I mean, at the end of the day, we're basking sharks, for heaven's sake.
Mm.
Basking's what we do. I mean, I have the greatest of respect for the non-basking sharks, of course I do.
Oh, yes, of course, absolutely.
I take my non-existent hat off to them. My sister-in-law, for instance, she's a nurse shark.
Good Lord, is she?
Yes, and a bloody good one. Yeah. Works her non-existent fingers to the bone.
To the non-existent bone.
Hmm?
Sharks don't have bones, Geoffrey.
Oh.
We're all cartilage.
Oh, we really? I did not know that. Well, well, sir, non-existent fingers to the non-existent bone, then, and fair play to her. But you know, I couldn't do what she does, not in a million years. I'm a basking shark. So, you know, excuse me for basking.
Here.
Johnny, well said.
I'll bask to that.
I think we all will.
For the attention of the director and staff of the British Museum of Natural History. Sirs, the continent of Australasia continues to yield wonders of all kinds to the naturalist. I am sending you by separate cover, along with the usual specimens of insects and bird skins, the remains of a quite extraordinary mammal, some 7 or 8 foot long from head to tail, which uses its enormously powerful hind legs to bound across the plains at great speeds. Exigencies of time compel me to curtail this account, but rest assured, my full-filled notes will, upon my return, be entirely at your disposal. I remain your humble servant, Alfred Hamberley.
Dear Mr. Hamberley, thank you for your email. We appreciate your continued interest in the work of the museum, but we must repeat, please stop sending us dead animals. We absolutely do not want any more corpses from you, whether of insects, birds, or particularly large mammals. The most recent mammalian specimen you sent us, incidentally, is a kangaroo, an animal that has been well known to the museum for over 200 years. It is of no scientific value to us. However, by sending it, you are breaking several laws in both Britain and Australia. Particularly as you neglected to refrigerate the container in which you shipped it, resulting in the intern who opened it taking a week off with stress. Enjoy your holiday, but please, enough with the corpses. Yours, Tony Farker, Director of Acquisitions, the Natural History Museum.
Dear sirs, inside the accompanying shipping crate, I am delighted to say I enclose no less than 18 partial or complete remains of giant squid.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Welcome to the gates of heaven.
Really? Actual gates on a cloud with a man with a white beard at a desk?
You seem surprised.
Well, I suppose I thought that was just what it looked like in, you know, cartoons and...
sketch shows. Yes, well, that's where we got the idea. It seems to make people feel comfortable when they first arrive, so...
And you're St. Peter?
If you like. So, let's see. Oh, well, you lived a good life, didn't you?
Did I?
Oh, yes. You loved and were loved. You were kinder than you had to be and not as cruel as you might have been.
Doesn't sound that much.
Oh, you'd be surprised. That's actually a pretty good score. Now, your views on religion.
Oh.
Your most often stated position was, I don't know if there's like an actual God per se, but I do have this sense that there's, like, you know, some kind of higher power, like a sort of some kind of spiritual dimension or something, I don't know.
I didn't...
Well, that's pretty much spot on. Well done.
Really?
Yeah, you've got us bang to rights there. Quite the theologian.
Oh, so can I come in?
Well, there's just one red flag on the system here.
Yes?
You had a mug.
A mug?
Yeah, from 1983 to 2002, you had a mug at work. And it said, if there's no chocolate in heaven, I don't want to go.
Right.
You see, the thing is, there isn't.
Isn't there?
No. You see, heaven is, well, it's... an ineffable, transcendent dimension of beingness, existing outside of all constructs of time or space. Do you know what I mean?
Not really.
No, you have to see it for yourself, really. But I just mean it's not the sort of place... it's not a place where you would get chocolate. And you've made your feelings very clear, so...
So what? What?
So... bye.
But it was only a mug. I didn't mean it.
Right. The thing is, we've nothing to go on here but the things you say and the things you do. And you did use that mug a lot.
Well, yes, but it was...
It was like your favourite mug.
It was a joke.
Hmm. Did people laugh?
Well...
And it's all the joke. Did they laugh at all?
Not really.
No, we didn't think so. So it does sort of boil down to you spending a quarter of your life displaying a condition under which you would not go to heaven. And it's a condition I'm afraid we can't meet.
But I've changed my mind.
Well, so you can imagine, we get quite a lot of that here. I don't suppose you recanted on your deathbed, did you?
Recanted?
Yes, if you said with your dying breath, I recant, I do want to go to heaven even if there isn't any chocolate, that sort of thing, we could probably do something for you, but no. Yeah, no, I'm afraid it probably is hell for you.
Hell?
Don't worry, it's not as bad as people think. It's more boring than anything. Oh, and I think they do have chocolate.
Do they?
Yes. Yeah, Minteros, I believe.
No!
My lord, I should now like to call an expert witness, Mr. Edward Collins.
Proceed.
Mr. Collins, you are an expert witness.
I am.
Then could you tell the court, in your own words, what wine would you recommend with a chicken curry?
A citrus-based Semillon or Sauvignon or possibly a Riesling.
I see. And tell me, how would you remove the steering wheel from a vintage tractor?
Use a puller and ratchet, first placing a few washers under the screw to avoid damaging the centering tip.
No further questions.
Your witness, Mr. Graham.
Yes, Mr. Collins, you told the court that a Sauvignon complements a chicken curry.
That is correct.
But is it not also the case that grass stains can be removed from clothing with baking soda and vinegar?
Certainly, or indeed with toothpaste.
Exactly so. No further questions.
Before you go, Mr. Collins, I have a question of my own. I really like this girl, and I want to ask her out, but how can I tell if she likes me back?
When you talk to her, my lord, notice whether she holds your gaze or looks away. Also, if she repeatedly touches your arm or shoulder or her own neck, that may indicate attraction.
Thank you, most enlightening. Arm, shoulder, or... Could you read the last part of the witness testimony back?
Or her own neck, that may indicate attraction.
Quite so. Thank you, Mr. Collins. You're free to go. Miss Hinchcliffe, you may proceed.
Thank you, my lord. I would now like to call a surprise witness.
Oh, damn, boy.
Goodness me, the late Elvis Presley riding a dragon!
Surprise!
So, Geoffrey. I don't want to interrupt your bath.
No, I can talk and bath.
I thought you could. Well, I was just wondering what happened with that fish you had your eye on the last time we foregathered.
Oh, now refresh my memory. Which fish would that have been? The little bluefin, was it?
It may have been. It may very well have been, yes.
Well, I ate that up, Humphrey.
Did you, Geoffrey? Did you really?
I certainly did. I ate that right up.
Oh, well. Bloody well done, Geoffrey.
Yes, bloody well done.
Bloody well done.
Mm. Oh, I say.
What's up, Zamsie?
Well, look, there's some sort of ghastly ship come along.
So there is.
It's casting a shadow right over our basking ground.
Oh, no.
Well, that's too bad, it really is.
Well, someone should say something.
Well, you know, I think I will.
You should, you really should.
I will, I really, I'm sorry, but I will. I say, excuse me, we're basking, do you mind?
Yeah, we are actually basking here.
Yes, we're basking sharks, you see, and your ship... Oh, ah! Oh, I say.
Are you all right, Geoffrey?
Yeah, I'm not entirely all right, Humphrey. No, I think some bloody little chappy on that ship's gone and harpooned me.
Do they harpoon sharks?
Well, you know, I would have to say, on the basis of the evidence before me, yes, they bloody do.
That's not on, is it?
Oh, well, look, they're winching me in. I'll have a word with them, put a stop to all this harpooning nonsense.
Oh, would you? That would be super.
Yes, don't you worry. You chaps enjoy your bath.
We will do, Geoffrey.
Super to see you. Cheerio.
What a ghastly fellow, Godfrey.
I know.
Did you hear? His sister-in-law's a nurse shark.
That's nothing. His father was a dogfish.
Doesn't surprise me. A
does not surprise me at all.
Expedition diary, day 43. Hunter died last night, leaving Captain Lewis and I the only men alive. We press on, but we cannot between us carry all our supplies. We must choose between the sled containing our fresh water and tinned meat, and our sled containing the crate of whiskey.
Okay. I think we gotta go east.
East.
Yeah, east. Looking at the map, I think we gotta go east.
All right. Which way is east?
What do you mean, which way is east? East is the way we gotta go.
Yeah, but which way is east?
Okay, well, look at north is always up top of the map, right? So east is this way.
Yeah, on the map it is, but which way is it in all of this real life?
Well, it's... I don't know.
I got a compass.
Okay, good. What's the compass say we gotta go?
Well, that's not how compasses work, Jake. They don't tell you where to go.
Sure they do. Let me take a look. Yeah, look, there's a goddamn pointer on it. What more do you want? You just follow the pointer.
I don't think you do.
Sure you do. Oh. Why else is there a pointer on it? It's a pointer. It points.
No, I think it's telling you where north is.
North? No, the map tells you where north is. It's up top of the map.
Yeah, I know, but the compass, right, it tells you where it is, you know, right now.
You're screwy.
I am not screwy.
You're goddamn screwy. Look at the damn pointer swinging around all over. How can that be north?
No, but Jake, that's you. You're swinging around.
Well,
all
okay
over.
Then, so what if I am? I'm swinging all over and it's swinging all over.
It does know, Jake. Look, quit swinging around.
What?
Look at it. It does know. See?
Okay, so it knows where north is. Loop-de-doo. How does that help us any?
What? I think, like, you use it with the map.
Oh, the map. Oh, what? Now you want the map back. Okay. I thought you were all Mr. Compass guy.
You use them both, Jake. You use them both. So the map says we gotta go east.
Yeah, I said that all along. I said that.
But you don't know which way east is, do
I
you?
Don't know where east is.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, how am I gonna know where east is?
You're not, Jake.
The Eastern Clint Eastwood?
No, you're not.
The Eastern Bunny, am I?
No, Jake, you're not Clint Eastwood and you're not the Easter Bunny, but it's okay. It's a compass. A compass knows where east is.
No, it don't.
It does, Jake. We've been through.
It does not.
It does.
It does not. I was listening. You think I don't listen, but I was listening to you. And the compass knows where north is.
Well, sure.
Yeah, not east, north.
Yeah, but...
No, yeah, but... No, no, I don't want to hear it. No, until you come back with a compass that points east...
Sure, Jake, sure. Which way does the map say we go?
This way!
Well, no, you just guessed.
This way!
Okay. Day 44. I know. 44 of the expedition. We're going east.
Would you like a banana?
No, thanks.
It's okay, I've got two.
No, I don't like them.
You don't like them?
No.
Oh, you mean you're allergic to them?
No, I just don't like them.
Bananas?
Yeah.
But they're nice.
Right, I don't think so.
Have you tried them?
Yeah.
But you don't like them?
No.
I don't understand.
There's nothing to understand. I just don't like the flavour.
But the flavour is banana flavour.
Yeah.
That's a nice flavour.
Not to me, it isn't. It's just a matter of taste.
Yes,
it?
Exactly, yes. And the taste of bananas is delicious.
Look, there must be things you don't like.
Well, yeah, I don't like nasty things like
olives.
Well, there you are, you see. I like olives.
No, I said olives.
Yeah, I like olives.
But they're horrible.
No, they're not. They're nice.
So, you're saying you like olives, you don't like bananas.
That's right.
If you had a banana and an olive, you'd eat the olive, but not the banana.
Yes.
You're weird. Right, well, I'll have the banana myself, then.
Please do. Hang on, I thought you said you were going to have a banana.
Yeah?
Well, where is it, then? And why are you unpeeling that delicious yellow olive?
Oh, I knew there'd be a rational explanation.
I'm Tim.
I'm also Tim.
And this old bugger is Giles.
Hello.
We're meeting up with Harry, three more Timmies and Miles.
Good-o.
But how to spot each other when the crowd is so thick?
Uh-oh.
Don't you worry, Timbo, there's a very old trick. We're wearing red trousers, so we're not hard to spot. We've all got red trousers, and we wear them a lot. We're wearing red trousers, as perhaps we have said. From belt hooks down to turnips, we are pillar box red.
Another gin and tonic, please, for each of the Tims.
Hooray!
A Jager bomb for Harry and a jug full of Pims.
I say!
Then let's lift up to Twickers, where the totty will swoon.
Hey.
And our lower limbs all slathered in a sea of maroon.
We're wearing red trousers and we're out on the lash. We've all got red trousers, also plenty of cash. And in our red trousers we will knock them all dead, with self-confidence as total as our trousers are red. Henley Ascot towards the Oval, Tingstad's place sounds like you will. Still in our red trousers, you can see them for miles. We love our red trousers, they're the last word in style. And in our red trousers we'll head back to South Kent. Till next week in the boat race and red trousers again. Red trousers. Red trousers. Red trousers. Red trousers. Trousers that are red.
John Finnemore's Souvenir Programme was written by Anne Spur, John Finnemore, with Michael Caborn-Smith, Simon Kane, Laurie Lewin and Carrie Quinlan. Original music was by Susanna Pierce and the producer was Ed Morris. And if you would like to know more about this programme, why not do a project on it like you used to at school? Don't forget the graphs.